Hi, this is Emily.
And this is Amy, and in this episode, AADL talks to Steve Adams. Steve is a lifelong resident of Ann Arbor and was a longtime employee of Borders, tracing back to their first store on State Street. Steve shares some of his memories from his tenure at Borders and reminisces about growing up in Ann Arbor, from meaningful times at Mac School to Ann Arbor's Jazz and Blues Festival.
Well, thanks so much for joining us today. Could you start by telling us where you grew up?
I grew up off of Minor on a little court called Elmcrest.
Can you describe Elmcrest, what it was like when you grew up?
What it was like?
Yeah.
Tons of kids everywhere. It was the ideal place to play touch football in the street. We played baseball there until we started breaking windows. And then we had a thing that was called the field.
What was the field?
The field was a property in the middle of the block between Fountain and Minor Bidding that was empty. There was nothing there. A lot of it is still empty, but it was landlocked, and we could, we actually had a baseball diamond there. Built a lot of forts, dug a lot of holes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, that was on the court right now. Actually, on that court, there are 1, 2, 3 families still left from when we moved out of there to my parents left there in 71.
Oh, wow.
So they moved on to Miller.
All right. What elementary school did you go to?
Mac.
Yeah, what was it like there?
It was interesting. It was a very interesting school. It had a little bit of everybody. Mac was kind of in the middle of the technically not segregated neighborhoods, but the red line areas.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, Miller was kind of the line. And so went up to Bidding, Crestfield area as far north. And then as far west is, I believe Huron.
Okay.
And I've forgotten how. See, it went all the way to Main Street, basically, and then west. I'm not sure how far it went, but I think Newport area.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Maybe Pomona.
So you actually still live near there, right? So, and I know that it's there's been a lot of talk about Water Hill and the naming and all. Can you tell me your thoughts about all of that?
It has a name. It was the neighborhood. It's where you lived.
Yeah.
But apparently it's been this thing. The neighborhood has very much changed.
Yeah.
When we moved into that neighborhood, my grandparents bought a house next to my great uncle on Gott Street. And then we moved from on Gott Street up to Elmcrest. And when we moved in, we were the first black family. By the time my family moved out of there, the whole neighborhood was basically black.
What was it like seeing that change as you were growing up?
It was one of those things where, oh, everybody moved. Ooh, there's a new group of kids to play with. Because the other kids, some of them weren't allowed to play with us. So they very quickly moved. Like right next door, there was a house that had basically 3 families in it. And they were all one family, and they moved out of the. They all moved, and they had a place on, another part of the family had a place on Fountain, and they all moved out of there as well at the same time.
Where'd they move?
Part of them moved to Dexter. Some of them moved to Chelsea. I mean, they moved to outlying areas, so they no longer were going to Ann Arbor schools, some of them.
So I know that you had family in this area since roughly around the Civil War time. So was it a huge family spread around the whole city or in that neighborhood? I mean, you have already mentioned a couple family members, uncles, whatever.
Most lived on the north side near Northside School.
Okay.
In that neighborhood. And that was where we lived with my grandparents until I was 6.
Okay.
And so when my grandparents sold a property, what is now on John A. Woods and Peach, that now has 3 houses on it.
Hmm.
And so they lived there, sold that and bought a house on Gott, and then sold that and moved on to the corner of Spring and Felch.
And has most of your family stayed in Ann Arbor?
Nope. Of my family, I think there one cousin has a house out on Keenly, and my dad is out by Myers.
What made you stay?
I like the neighborhood. I like the city. I'm a small city kid.
Yeah.
I was used to doing things like being able to walk to a football game, to be able to walk or ride my bike all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
This is the type of city I was always looking for. I mean, I left for 2 years and came back and went, oh, this is what I was looking for. looking for a place where there are lots of things to do, lots of people. You don't have to spend a lot of money to go do something to read, because at that time you were allowed into any library. When I grew up, I mean, I used to go into the university libraries and sit and read. You couldn't check anything out, but I could sit there and read.
Did you have something in particular that interests you? What would you look for books about?
A little bit of everything.
Yeah.
Lots of science books. I was interested in animals. Lots of literature, lots of science fiction that I didn't want to pay for.
Yeah.
That I could sit and read. God, so much stuff. I mean, I spent a ton of time here, actually. In this library. Yeah, in fact, here and at the old Y.
Yeah, right across the street. Yeah.
Yeah. So every summer I was involved in the summer reading program. And, you know, with the idea of you had so many books to read.
Mm-hmm. So I'm curious about what you know about your earliest ancestors that came here. And what did they do for a living? And where did they come to the north side? Or do you know where they originally settled when they came here?
North side, Wall Street area,
okay.
4th Ave. As my mom describes the very first house she lived in, being on 4th Ave, near some of the families that were there until just recently. In fact, one of the families is still there. But the house has been torn down and has a McMansion on it now, on the property. My grandmother was a practical nurse. My aunt, she became a nurse's aide, but she was one of the first black elevator operatives in the city.
Do you know where she worked?
Actually, I take that back. That was my grandmother who was.
Mm-hmm.
Was it? I think there's still a bank there, but it's the corner of Maine and Huron. Would be the...
Is that the Key Bank?
Southwest corner. Let's see. A lot of the men worked in car factories, or car industry somehow. Uncle drove a cab. My dad worked in a factory and ended up, in fact, managing that factory later on.
What was the name of the factory?
It's out of Whitmer Lake. It was Hoover Chemical. I don't know what it is now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember. It's been through several names.
Jumping back to you, so you went to Mac, and then what was your next schooling step?
Forsyth.
Mm-hmm. And then?
Pioneer. My sophomore year is the year that Huron and Pioneer split.
Right. Oh, so what was it like before then? Was the school pretty crowded? How did that work?
Well, my sophomore year, the building for Huron was not ready yet because of a steelworker strike. So we went split shifts. School started, if I remember correctly, at 10 to 7.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it was pure torture. I was lucky. My first period was study hall.
And sleep hall, you mean?
No, it was, I'll be in time for the second period.
There you go, right.
And my parents were fine with that.
Yeah.
As long as my grades didn't drop.
Mm-hmm.
But there were portable classrooms everywhere. That open area that used to be used for parking on the front on the stadium had probably 8 portables. Then there were portable classrooms in the middle because the school is shaped sort of like a C.
Yeah.
So there were portable classrooms there. There were portable classrooms at the southwest end. Yeah.
You know, that's funny. I've never seen a photo of the portable classrooms there. I would have thought we would have one in our collection, but I've not seen one.
Yeah, they just look like A trailer.
A little trailer sitting out there. Yeah.
Not a little trailer.
A big trailer.
Look more like a trailer park trailer.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So what are some of your memories of Pioneer High?
Oh, I had a blast.
Yeah? Did you play any sports? Did you join any clubs?
I used any excuse I could to not go home. I played football. My sophomore year, I played football, baseball, and basketball. My junior year, I played football. Didn't get picked for the basketball team, so I stayed there and wrestled, and then I ran track. But I ended up on the basketball team later. Senior year, it was football and track. But it was great. My sophomore year, I didn't go home because school was over at, 1:50? And it didn't make sense to go home and turn around and have to come back for practice. So I just stayed there and studied. So I very rarely took books home.
That's a long day, starting at, 7:10 in the morning and going?
No, 6:50.
6:50. All right. What did you do after school?
After school?
When you graduated.
When I graduated, I went to U of M eventually.
What did you study?
A little bit of everything. I did not finish. Ended up at Eastern after I came back because I left and went to California for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Came back because I couldn't afford to live out there.
Yeah, who could?
Well, when you've got three jobs and you're barely paying your bills.
So tell us the path from there, and how did you eventually make it to Borders?
I ended up working at the very first street level Borders.
Mm-hmm.
Which was where the Red Hawk is located now. And then I started in September when I came back from California. And then in November, we opened across the street where most people know of us. They're a couple of doors down from the theater.
Right.
What were those early days like in Borders? What were you doing?
You did whatever was necessary, whatever the manager told you. Or needed you to do. I mean, you ran downstairs to get books, you shelled books, you cleaned up, you swept, you vacuumed, you swept the sidewalk, washed windows, whatever was necessary.
Did you have a favorite job?
My favorite job was work the floor.
Yeah.
And help people find the books they were looking for, make recommendations. Basically, as I do now, I like to talk to people. Mm-hmm. I like to move around. I like to be able to see what's going on.
So I'm curious, what was the atmosphere like? Like, first of all, did you have any inkling that Borders was going to explode into the big corporation that it became?
The owners basically were extremely lucky. They had employees who pushed them to go in the direction that worked.
Oh, really?
But at the same time, they were willing to take care of their employees. That was one of the things that they did. They believed that happy employees made for happy clients and eventually made for happy investors. I mean, it was one of the first places that had healthcare. I mean, we're talking 70s. Healthcare in a retail environment was unheard of. They did profit sharing, which, again, unheard of.
Yeah, right.
But at the same time, they wanted to take care of their employees. But when I said that they had employees who pushed them, it's like, their idea was they wanted to be basically a Barnes & Noble, a Walden's, and people fought them on that. Fought them to carry a wider variety of books, rather than carrying book five of a six-book series and book five only, to carry all six, to not just sell the books that everybody's looking for, because you could get that at Walden's, you could get that at Barnes & Noble. How about the other books, the literature that people couldn't find? And back then, there was no going online to get that stuff. You had to find it. And at the same time, the idea was, hey, if you were someplace and you saw this book that the customer's looking for, we don't have it, tell them. Mm. Share that. Help them. Because they'll remember, the owner thought it was a great idea because the customers loved it. They loved that somebody was helping them do that, and they would come back for that.
What first drew you to apply for the job at Borders?
Besides needing a job?
Yeah.
It was, when I came back to town, it was going to be either I was going to try and get a job in a bookstore or a record store because I love music. And the bookstore came through first. In fact, I was one of those folks not hired by the manager that everybody knows. I was hired before he became that manager.
It sounds like that you knew that they had a good, you know, policy. They had, obviously, they had benefits. They listened to their employees. You saw a lot of changes over time there. Talk a little bit about those transitions and what you, as an employee who saw it go from a small, successful business to a much bigger business, and then later, you know, what happened to Borders. Tell us what you saw.
First off, I didn't know that that was how the owners were. My very first day was me working, trying to figure things out, and then being taken out to lunch by one of the Borders brothers and him just letting me know that, hey, your family, my employees are family. I did not know that. I did not know that that's how he felt. And then when we moved across the street, we quadrupled in size because the first floor was all books, the mezzanine was all remainders, and then the second floor was artwork, prints, framing, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
People just said, you're crazy. There's no way you're going to sell enough books to be able to afford that space. And we did. The major change was the inventory system. Because the inventory system is what allowed Borders, I think, to become what they became. Because you knew what was in the store, you knew what you needed, you knew what was selling. There were no surprises.
How did you maintain that, whether it was you specifically or the Borders you?
Well, it was computer system. Initially every week, they took all those cards and ran them through a computer that they rented time on, time sharing, and they would get a printout of what it sold, and they could put that together and make your orders and get the bigger discount. Then eventually they started selling that and helping people set up other stores, and then that allowed them to make their orders larger. There was a group of purchasers.
So this is in the early 70s then?
That would be late 70s.
Late 70s, okay.
So we moved in 74, and okay. That's when I started, was in 74.
All right, I need to know more about this computer. So they shared time?
Yes.
And where was the computer? Where did it live?
I don't remember the company that they bought time on.
But they would take the cards, like, to the computer, wherever it was, on campus or whatever, mm-hmm. and run them.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really interesting. It's very old school, isn't it?
Well, that's, you have to remember that, you know, back then, computers were huge.
Right.
I mean, that laptop that you have there on the desk would have been something that maybe took up this entire room.
Yep.
And needed to be cooled because, you know, it was really good at heating. Things.
That's really interesting because I think it's, I'm not entirely sure on my library history, but the automations in that environment happened faster than here, you know, for the library. Wow. So talk a little bit more about some of the changes that you saw and what you thought about them before you left.
The initial changes I saw, I didn't mind. I mean, the idea of opening other Borders stores made sense. I mean, you have to remember the University of Michigan has a huge alumni base.
Right.
And to the point that when we opened a store in Singapore in the 80s, was that 90s? Yeah, that would have been 90s. When that store was open, there were people walking in apparently, from what I hear, saying, hey, I remember Borders when I was at the University of Michigan. When they opened that first store in Dearborn, they were absolutely shocked at how popular it was. And they opened that third store in Atlanta. They couldn't believe the number of people who were there and knew and didn't understand the name recognition that came with it. mean, people were in and out of the city for conferences, for all the university things that they come here for. Plus, you know, the parents who were here, they would go into Borders, and because a Borders type bookstore was not the rule, it was the exception.
So here's a question for you. Shame and Drum opened at some point in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also had, you know, Ulrich's and the campus stores that were mm-hmm. selling the text.
Mm-hmm.
What did Borders do differently? I mean, you've already talked about the inventory system, but they didn't fill the same niche that obviously Ulrich's and Shame and Drum did. Can you talk a little bit about the rivalry or the various different students that they attracted and customers that they attracted?
Okay. First off, the Borders was the place you went to get the stuff you wanted to read on your free time. Although we carried some things that were used in classes, and eventually, I mean, our computer book section became huge and had a bunch of things that were textbooks. But
didn't try to.
It wasn't to compete with the. That was just a market we weren't in.
Yeah.
That was a market. That market was unbelievably cutthroat.
How did your job change as Borders got bigger and expanded, or did it not?
It changed in that I was given more responsibility. I built sections.
Ooh, tell me more.
Let's start with computer section. It's not. Let's start with science fiction.
Okay.
Science fiction has always been a pet thing to read. I love science fiction, especially true hardcore science fiction, not fantasy, not the sword and sorcery stuff. But I built that section to where if I ran across a review of something or was talking to somebody and found out about it, I'd make sure it was there. I recommended things and it became the person to come talk to about science fiction. And then one day, all these computer books showed up. They were ordered. Nobody, it was kind of like all these new publishers came into being let's put it this way. You've seen a computer software manual. It's written by the programmer who basically can't write. And so it opened up a market for books that were actually easier to read, more straightforward, and had all the little tricks and things that you needed to know. So that was kind of the next thing I ended up working on, was building that. I also built our magazine section up into something that was a little bit bigger than what it was, carrying with the idea being, yeah, you know, you could go down the street and get all the Time magazines in the world, but you couldn't get the Village Voice anywhere, everywhere. And so the concentration was selling the magazines that other people didn't have, the Architectural Digest, those sorts of things that other stores didn't have, most magazine shops didn't have. And that was kind of the way Borders built itself in all sections, to have the things that other people didn't have.
Hmm. How did you decide what things? How did you come across those? If other people didn't have them, how did you find out about them?
I'm a reader. I read magazines. I read reviews. I talked to people. I talked to customers. You find out what customers are looking for. I knew people who were book reviewers because Ann Arbor's loaded with them. They're everywhere.
Yeah.
And so I got a chance to talk to them. There was a couple guys who I knew who wrote science fiction reviews for the New York Times, for the Cleveland Plain Dealer, the LA Times. They're just people who I knew who lived in Ann Arbor. And we'd end up talking about books.
Well, I'm wondering, so you sci-fi to the computer books, which it sounds like kind of fell in your lap, but then did you enjoy continuing to build that? Did you find yourself having to answer not just recommendations, but tech support?
Well, I ended up doing tech support for the store.
Oh,
just
okay.
Just because, well, okay. I was also taking classes, and there were computer science classes at Eastern. So it also was my interest. Mm-hmm. It was my new interest, something I had been playing with since high school. I mean, I wrote my first computer program, I believe my sophomore or junior year of high school.
Mm-hmm.
Had a friend whose dad was a engineering professor here. And we got a chance to play with some of the games on the old teletype machines, you know, where you would choose what you put an inner number and it would take the number of the play for a football game. Okay, so you're on offense. So, okay, let's run this. And they would end up somehow taking that input and giving you, oh, you gained 4 yards. Or you gained, oh, touchdown, blah, blah, blah. That stuff was great. And we got in trouble because we somehow found our way into the actual program. And, yeah.
That's great.
Dad had to fix it because we had really screwed it up so that we could win.
So that's, it sounds like you had the perfect job. I mean, I think Emily would agree with me here. I mean, this feels like the perfect job. You
absolutely
get to read books and you get to also think about books. And it sounds like you got to do what you wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
You got to pursue what you wanted. And so you eventually, you became part of the IT staff. Can you talk a little bit about how the computer and the IT system changed over the years?
Well, that was the big thing. We used to get a printout every 2 weeks of what was in the store, what we carried. That went from this big printout of our inventory to a computer system where you could actually look up online. This thing I remember.
Magic.
I remember them putting the network in and me standing there going, they hired these guys to put in the network because they were running network lines over electrical lines, and which meant that there was interference and other things. Everything was, of course, it was hardwired. There was no wireless. Then went from that, that computer system evolved with computers everywhere rather than in the old store. There were on the main floor 3 computers. And then in the new store, when we moved to Liberty, from Liberty and Maynard, oh, God, there were computers everywhere.
Yeah, I remember.
There was a desk everywhere. The registers ended up being computerized. It was great. It was wild. But then again, there needed somebody to be able to support that and understand, how to fix some of this stuff or to make a call into store support to work with them to fix stuff. And eventually what happened is I got hired by them.
Wow, that's handy.
Well, it turned out to be a good thing because the Borders brothers sold to Kmart.
Mm-hmm.
And they sold to Kmart. Kmart eventually, a few years later, was in really dire straits. And the investors wanted them to sell off, as I remember, wanted them to sell off the specialty division. The specialty division included Walden's, one of the either Office Depot or Office Depot, and a few other things that are still in existence that they've since they sold off. Well, they went, oh, Borders, Walden's, you both sell books. You're now one company. Go forth, make cash. And we became an independent company with them. Problem, of course, is Walden's and Borders had 2 very, very, very different corporate cultures. Walden's was all about the numbers. If you couldn't quantify it in a number, it didn't exist. Hmm. Borders was about customer service. It was about helping the customer get what they needed. And when Borders moved into an area, opened a store, they would become... The object was to become part of the actual community. We'd get our coffee from local roasters if available. Get your pastries from a local baker, so on and so forth. Walden's was not there about that big national contract. And I think that was the beginning of the end. That was when it just didn't feel right. And I think one of the final straws is them not wanting to go online. Yeah. And that was wanting to go online before Amazon existed. Would have blown Amazon out of the water because Borders had name recognition and brick and mortar stores. And brick and mortar stores, yeah, I know everybody says that that was, you know, you're tying up inventory and so on and so forth, but you have customers, you have a place that customers could touch the merchandise and look at it. And if, you know, we'd offered the same discounts online that Amazon offered originally, wouldn't have been a problem. I don't think. I think that it would have been a great thing and Borders would still be in existence.
So at that point in time, when it was becoming clear that perhaps there should be a web presence, were you still working at Borders or were you doing tech support elsewhere? I think I'm a little unclear. Did you get hired by Borders to run their tech support or were you hired by an external company?
Borders.
Borders.
I moved from the store on Liberty to the corporate offices,
which
were off of Ellsworth at that time. And I moved into store support.
Okay.
I was kind of bribed to do that.
How quickly did you see that things were going to maybe take a turn for the worse? And how quickly did others see it? Was it sort of universally people saw that coming or?
I don't think so. I think there was the fight.
Yeah.
It was a big fight between Walden's and Borders. I mean, the Walden systems were all DOS-based, old systems. And the Borders systems were Windows-based, Windows NT-based, and moving right along. And the two systems couldn't talk. They had to create a third system to take the Walden's and the Borders orders, combine them to send them off to get the big discount because you got discounts according to how much you bought, you purchased from a publisher in each order.
So were you working in helping to develop things or helping to make sure that they actually did the job or a bit of each?
My job was more so to help make sure things worked.
Yeah.
So.
Did you like it?
Oh, sure. I had a blast. I had fun. I had fun until they decided that, I think the thing that told me really that things were going the wrong way is when they decided Walden's, Borders, corporate. Oh, because there were basically three supports. There was the corporate office support, which was very different than the stores because everything was locked down in the stores. There was the Walden support and Walden's systems, like I said, were very different than the Borders store systems. So there were basically three support. And then they kind of looked one day and somebody decided, hey, you all deal with computers. We'll combine it all together and call it support. And that failed miserably. And that was when I basically saw that things were headed the wrong direction.
At that point, how many years, roughly, had you been working for Borders?
I started in 74. I moved into store support in 98. And in 2006, I was let go.
That's a long...
That was, what, 32 years, I believe?
Yeah, that is a long time.
Yeah.
So when you're in that place where you're starting to see, like you said, the combining all to one support, and you start to feel that, oh, maybe this isn't the right path, how does your longevity, the changes you had seen before, clearly this felt different, right?
Felt very different. I mean, there was also the changes in the store where basically Borders had for years been hiring people according to their book knowledge. What do you know about books? Are you a reader? It was decided, oh, we have a computer system. It doesn't matter. Anybody can sell books. Which didn't help because that meant that people came into the store and there was nobody there who really could help make recommendations or very few people.
But now at this point, you also had DVDs and you had CDs and, you know, so did you have special?
We had VHS.
Maybe before, yeah, before the DVDs. Yeah.
And we had a coffee shop as well. The Ann Arbor store was the flagship store, so it had to have everything that any store might have.
Okay, yeah.
And then at one point they added cards and, yeah.
All the little things you buy at those service desks and, yeah.
All the things that were available everywhere else.
Yep.
How does your many years of working in a bookstore impact how you interact with bookstores today? Or books in general?
And books in general, I was always a reader, will always be a reader. I mean, I'm constantly reading about books, finding out about books, not reading as much as I did, but I do read. I do continue to maybe go into the bookstore. Like, Schuler Books. Mm-hmm. Schuler Books is an old Borders client store. The two owners, the owner I worked with at the store. I go out there occasionally and just walk through and run into people out there who used to work at Borders. I don't go downtown much because there is a bookstore down there. I can't remember its name now.
Literati.
Yeah, Literati has a ton of the old Borders employees.
So you eventually... you stayed with IT, and tell us your journey after being let go at Borders. Where did you end up?
I ended up at the hospital, at U of M Hospital, doing the same thing for the hospital. I basically got let go in May, I believe, and we were employees for a month, I think, till the end of June. Borders paid us with the understanding that we had to be available if something was needed from us. In mid-August, started at the hospital. I mean, I applied for one job and got an interview right away and found out that, well, I knew people, actually. Knew lots of people, so my resume ended up on the manager's desk from many different sources.
Nice. So let's take a step back from Borders and just look at Ann Arbor as a whole. In your practically lifetime here, minus those 2 years, Ann Arbor has changed quite a bit.
Just a little.
You know. What are some of those changes that stick out to you, for better or worse?
I used to live on North Main. Thursday night, basically, the traffic was like a football Saturday, backed up, trying to get into downtown to party. Ann Arbor's become the place that everybody comes to go out to dinner, to go to a bar, to get a cup of coffee. The downtown's become basically bars, restaurants, and coffee shops. There's very little that is not, which is kind of sad because that's one of the reasons I live where I live is because I can walk downtown.
Yeah. What is a place you used to go to downtown that you miss?
The Del Rio.
Tell me more.
Yeah.
The Del Rio was the ultimate bar. It basically was a co-op.
Really?
Yeah, it was run by the employees. Things were voted on. They had the best burritos and whole wheat crust pizza. Oh, it was amazing. And so it was just one of those places. Oh, Sunday nights they had music.
Mm-hmm.
The story, supposedly, of how it got started was a guy got a grant to do a PhD or something, some sort of study, and he had this idea that a co-op business could survive. So he ended up starting this business and with that money, and he happened to also be a piano player.
Rick Burgess?
Yeah, I think
Yeah.
Rick was his first name. I can't remember what the last name was. Oh, God, I miss that place. I used to actually sneak in there before I could drink legally to listen to music. I also used to, you know, stand outside the bars that used to be on Ann Street and listen to blues there. Oh, I got in trouble for that one.
Yeah? What happened?
Well, I'd wait until my parents went out. And so I stand in the alley listening to music and, you know, figuring if I kind of knew when my parents would get home. I got home and my dad was there waiting because he had seen me.
No.
Yeah. And the first thing he did is, okay, you don't smell like smoke, so you weren't smoking. I don't smell alcohol in your breath. What were you doing? Listening to the music? You know that you're not supposed to be out that time of night. It's past your curfew, and I got grounded.
What were the names of some of those clubs? I'm trying to remember.
Plinths or something like that. I don't remember now. Mm. I just don't remember.
There were a couple of them, though. And then weren't there shows at the Armory there, too, at times? Or
Yeah, there were shows there. There was also the Blind Pig, which was a Blind Pig, I believe, at one point. So I used to stand outside there. The Del Rio used to have music, like I said. The Old Town, which is still there. Floods.
Were you around for, what's the name of the Golden Falcon?
Oh, yeah.
So that was that short-lived?
No, that had been there a long time.
Really? Okay, tell me about that.
It was there where, Ruth's something or other, steakhouse.
That was there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was down there. And the area became a little seedy with massage parlors and a few other things that are now gone. And that was, it got closed down, but it was a great place. I mean.
With music and.
Yeah, I mean, Bob James played there when he was in college.
Wow.
Bunches of people. But yeah, I used to go stand near there too and listen to music. Well, the thing that comes to mind since we were just talking about music is the very first Ann Arbor Blues and Jazz Festival.
All right, tell us about that.
There was a festival the year before that was, I believe, inside that I wasn't aware of, but that would have been, right, 70, 71, that summer before my senior year of high school, because it was next to Huron High. The number of musicians who were there, Miles Davis, Bonnie Raitt, Howlin' Wolf, I just go on and on. First night I was there, I jumped the fence. Just kind of jumped the fence and just stood there in complete awe of the music and the quality and the people and who, it was just amazing. Came back and ended up working security. Very pleasant memory, several of those. And basically they got run out of Ann Arbor because it was too many of those hippies in one place.
Yep. Scared people.
And that loud music.
Yeah.
And because despite the reputation Ann Arbor has, it is not the liberal place that everybody says it is. It has that patina of liberalism. As long as it's not in my backyard, not next door to me, not my neighborhood, it's a very subtly racist place. In fact, it wasn't subtle, because I remember some of the things that happened to my parents. I remember some of the things that happened to family members. Like my sister and my two brothers basically riding their brand new bikes and getting pulled over because, well, you don't have a receipt for those. And my parents having to go get them and the bikes.
Wow.
Because, you know, that was their Christmas. Some of the other things, like myself, getting stopped basically for running. I got stopped and the question was, what are you doing? Okay, I have running shoes on, sweats, and I'm sweating. I'm running. And I got, the next question was, from what?
You were just exercising.
Mm-hmm.
You
weren't. I used to work as a bouncer. And so I'd come home so awake that I'd just go for a run or a bike ride. I was also noted for being seen around town on my bike at two, three, four in the morning.
Yeah, you're a bike. You're an avid biker, right? Or
I will be again.
You will be again.
Yeah, it just went through a hip replacement.
Did you? Okay.
But so basically, my experience in Ann Arbor is, shall we say, it's very different. I mean, having dealt with some of the things that happened, elementary school, one of my most pleasant memories is a woman by the name of Miss Green, Eileen Green, was my fourth, fifth, sixth grade teacher. As it turns out, my understanding is that we were her dissertation. Putting a group of kids of all types together and keeping them together for 3 years. Many of us are still friends to this day. Or if we see each other, it's like seeing an old friend. And, you know, I mean, we're talking some very, very rich kids, all ethnicities from immigrants, Spanish, to black kids, to, yeah, just a little bit of everybody. And in fact, there was just a Mech school celebration of its 100-year anniversary. Mm-hmm. And a lot of us ended up there, meeting, talking together. We got split up amongst basically two junior highs, because back then it was junior high was 7th, 8th, and 9th. Mm-hmm. And high school started as a sophomore. A lot of us didn't really see each other again until high school, and we're friends again.
So, Miss Green, you said her name was?
Yeah.
So, what was the class like? What did she do in the class? What was her teaching style like?
There was a lot of, I remember it as she would put us together, some according to skill level, mm-hmm. where you were, and some she would put together all types of kids and want those that were very good at something to help others out.
Nice.
Sounds like you really built connection.
We did. It was, well, I credit her basically. It was turning me around and I was getting in trouble. Basically, I was not a happy kid. So she kept us out of trouble. She used to take us to plays in Detroit, to museums. She would take the class to museums. Went to the DIA in Detroit, and we went to, I'd been in the Fox Theater several times with her.
She would take us
to see movies. Got a chance to see a lot of things because of her and some introductions. And I think that's what finalized my love for reading.
Yeah.
Was through her.
Well, thank you so much, Steve.
You're welcome. It was fun.
AADL Talks To is a production of the Ann Arbor District Library.